Alright, so today we are very excited to have Kay from the Immigration People back with us. And of course, the last chat we had was about 2 years back already. Time flies, right, Kay?
Correct.
Yeah, that was in 2 years, 2021. And we had the So Far So Good episode talking about, firstly, what do you do at TIP, in short, of the Immigration People, which, of course, I think you said about 3.5 years back, you mentioned.
Yes, correct.
Right. And I think today we want to chat a little bit more, firstly, about the recent influx, of course, of foreign investors to Singapore, expatriates in terms of coming to Singapore after post-COVID, as well as, of course, your entrepreneurship journey. So thank you so much for coming with me. Of course, I have Beatrice with us here today. Yeah. Are you excited, Beatrice?
Yes. First time meeting Kay. I've heard so many inspiring stories about your
really, thank you.
Your entrepreneurial journey. So yeah, excited to chat more today.
Great.
Yeah.
So we want to pick your brain a little bit about what has happened. I mean, since we met 2 years back, from 2021 until today, what has been the market trending and seen in terms of the amount of interest from foreign expatriates, foreign investors? And of course, have you seen like a surge in the number of applications coming to Singapore?
Yes, definitely. I think it's due to the push factors mainly. As some of the Chinese national, they've seen how the government handled the whole pandemic situation.
Right.
So some of them maybe lost confidence with the government. So a lot of them wants to come out. So when the borders opened last year, so a lot of newcomers, so a lot of new EP applications, work pass application received by MOM. So mainly from Chinese nationals, actually all around the world. But what I have seen, it's Chinese and Hong Kong people as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Has that been like a significant increase in, I mean, because you help so many foreign expatriates to make their applications on a day-to-day basis, right? And by the way, the Immigration People, if you have not seen the previous episode, Kay and her team focuses on anything all the way from work pass, EP applications, PR applications, citizenship as well, and providing like consultancy advisors as well for new families coming to Singapore. So I think she's very on the ground, on a macro and micro basis. So has that been like a shift in terms of percentage compared to like during the pandemic season and after the borders opening? What has been the percentage change in the amount of like applications that you're handling on a monthly basis?
I think definitely we see around 20% of increase. Comparing with the pre COVID. And I guess like most of them, like I said, you know, they're being pushed to look for other places to stay. And Singapore become their top interest place because of the environment. So a lot of Chinese here, they have no problem if they can't really speak English pretty well.
Right.
Yeah, so I think it's about 20%. And government actually encourage a lot of newcomers. Yeah, they are controlling the quality of the people coming in. So they are launching like new passes, like one pass, you know, you have to earn a 30,000 salary. And then they have been increasing the salary requirement for EP as well. But they are still remain open for top tier talents to come into Singapore. Yeah, so because we also have a lot of foreigner left, more than 200,000 people actually left Singapore during the pandemic.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So the government actually kind of like, you know, wants people to come in to top up our population.
So 200,000 foreigners left Singapore. Like, do we have like a rough statistics which nationality or like roughly based on your sensing?
It's a mixture, honestly. Yeah, it's a mixture. But I do have quite a lot of Caucasian family went back.
Right.
Yeah, some of them, it's like they're anti-vaccination groups of people. Yeah, so some of them just do not like how Singapore government being a bit more strict, you know, on COVID. Yeah, the restriction of how many people can gather. Yeah, but I think it's a mixture of different nationalities.
Right, okay. Can you share with us a little bit about the one pass that just now you were talking about?
Yeah.
What is this one pass?
So one pass is overseas network and expertise pass. Yeah, so it's aiming for top tier people to come in here. So basically, there are three categories of the people that can come in. The first one is that if you have been earning 30,000 overseas, like overseas income, right, for the last 1 year, or you are earning 30,000 in Singapore right now, a basic salary, right? And last but not least, or your future employment in Singapore is going to give you this 30,000 salary.
Okay.
Yeah. Correct. Right.
So one, the O means overseas.
Overseas, yes.
Then N means
network.
Network. And then E.
Expertise.
Expertise, right. Yeah. Okay. Was this like launched very recently?
Yes, January this year.
Okay. Yeah. And you also mentioned like with the introduction of this pass, the PR application qualification so-called like requirements also has changed.
That one is the salary requirement for the work pass for with Ministry of Manpower.
Okay. Mm. Right. Beatrice, how about yourself? Like how have you noticed this like there's been so much news, right? About foreign investors buying Singapore properties, and then there's a lot of influx of expatriates coming back to Singapore. Like, what are your thoughts about this?
I think there's been a lot of talk, especially recently with the recent cooling measures. I mean, where we saw the largest increment since, I think, December of 2021, when back then the ABSD rate for foreign buyers increased from 20% to 30%, so that was a 10% increase. But this time around, it's like double so it's like a 30% increase now.
Yeah.
But we still see headlines. We still see headlines of like China buyers or ultra high net worth buyers coming to buy luxury properties in Singapore. And then I think also from the stats that our research team has done for Q1 of 2023, we're seeing like a 7%, I think, total number of transactions in terms of like the foreign investment purchases of private residential property. So I think like we're seeing a lot of hype, you know, in terms of like foreign interest in Singapore. I think like what Kay mentioned just now, because we are still seen as being very attractive in terms of the environment and the economy, like the fundamentals of our market and all that.
Yeah. Kay, thanks Beatrice. Like what are your thoughts about just like you mentioned, like there's been a lot of interest from Chinese so-called expatriates coming to Singapore, right? What is your sensing? And then of course, like once they come in, they meet you, what are they buying actually? Like do you get information on this?
We do not have much information on what are they buying exactly, but right. I do have a client who, you know, they want to get a Singapore citizenship. So the moment they come in here, they are aiming at Singapore passport because a lot of them wants to buy a landed property in Singapore.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, correct.
Usually through your conversations with them, do they also ask you like, hey, Kay, do you like, what kind of properties will you recommend me to purchase? And like usually, how will the conversation flow? Is it like firstly talking about schools first and then talking about rental accommodation and then talking about of course, with the passport and what to buy and all that. Usually, what are the interest topics that a foreign family will have first, the moment they meet you?
Like I mentioned like previously, so a lot of them wants to aim for Singapore passport. So they want to find ways to apply for permanent residency in Singapore.
Okay.
So I'll be introducing like what are different schemes available. So like example, right now the Global Investor Program, they have increased the investment quantum as well. So it makes it very difficult for people to get PR directly. So
normally, how much is the quantum now?
Oh, previously the investment quantum was only 2.5 million.
Okay.
But right now they increased to 25 million if you were to set up a family office here. If you want to invest in business, then it's a 10 million investment. And 5 years renewal, when it's a 5 years renewal, you have to be able to hire 30 employees. Previously was only 10 employees. So I think the government wants to encourage high net worth people come in here, but not just to enjoy Singapore, but really, you know, create job opportunities for the local. Yeah, so they will actually find out what are the different ways, okay, and then we would give recommendation. And the next thing is that most of them will go for, you know, setting up family office or perhaps setting up a business here. And then they will start asking like corporate bank account, you know, and then rental as well. That's where they will actually bring their family in. Purchasing now, I think they will think twice, with the 60%.
Right.
That's why it actually increases the value of PR.
Right, right. So maybe share with our audience, like usually in terms of what you do with your clients, the moment that you first meet them, I understand there's a lot of consultation that will usually kickstart first. Maybe you can share a little bit about what does TIP do on like a day-to-day basis.
Most of our clients are still those that already have a work pass here. Some of them been living here for a few years now, and a lot of them are struggling to get PR and citizenship because the rejection rate is extremely high right now.
Right.
Since the government tightened the immigration policy in year 2009. The rejection rate is high. People want to know like how a consultancy firm can help them to increase their chances.
Right.
Yeah, correct. So they will come for a consultation.
There's a lot of meetups with existing expatriates that are already in Singapore.
Yes, correct. And we have a small numbers of clients are overseas. How they find us is through sometimes our WeChat official account, you know, Xiaohongshu. We are on Xiaohongshu. So they will start inquiring like, oh, how can I move in here? Yeah, right. That's where we will do a longer planning for them.
Okay. And usually they are still overseas.
Okay. Yes.
And in terms of just now, you mentioning the part that this 1 to 2 years, you've seen an influx of Chinese families, right? Usually these Chinese families, are they already in Singapore? Like, or they are still overseas, but they're thinking about coming here? Or like, maybe they already have gotten like a PR already, but planning for citizenship? Like, what is the usual ratio of Chinese that is already in Singapore versus Chinese not in Singapore?
I think we're getting more inquiry from people who are already here. Yeah, this is because of our marketing channel, right? We are focusing more on the local Google search and things like that. So as you know, right, people don't use Google in China, right? So that's why our main focus is still doing the one conversion from EP to PR. Yeah, and then because of other channel, then we get a lesser inquiry, but still a handful of people inquiring to come in here. And also PR to citizenship, we are doing it quite a lot as well.
Beatrice, yesterday you were watching K's first episode. What are some of your thoughts when you first heard about this particular business, right, that actually connects expatriates to Singapore, helping expatriates to get their passes? What are your thought process about this business?
I think one thing that struck me when I was watching KS yesterday, I think one very interesting point where she pointed out was that they don't just help clients to, in terms of, yes, everything that you mentioned just now, EP pass, conversion from PR to citizen, but it's more of like helping them to assimilate to Singapore society, like, do other things as well, like through volunteering. It's not just like the monetary like contributions that Singapore is looking at, but also they're looking for people who candidates who really want to, who see a future in Singapore and really want to call Singapore their home. That was, I think, something that like struck out to me when I was watching yesterday.
Right. What was your inspiration? I mean, like, to set up this business, because I understand from your history, right? I mean, you were flying 5 years with SQ.
Yes.
You were born in Malaysia. And then after you worked for 2 years at the immigration company, and you decided to start on your own for the last 3.5 years, what was your inspiration?
I felt like I want to help expat to really, you know, come to Singapore and ease their stay here, because as a foreigner myself, used to be a foreigner, so I've gone through the whole process of, firstly, 12 years ago, I get an EP, and afterwards, you know, I applied for my PR, and I just got my citizenship approved.
Congrats.
Yeah, 2 months ago.
Right.
Yeah, so that's why, you know, I felt like I was once in their shoe. And I know how important it is having a residency status here.
Right.
And I genuinely want to help them to make Singapore their permanent home. So that's why we guide them through the whole process, you know. We guide them how they can, you know, do some volunteering works to integrate to Singapore.
Okay. Yeah. Interestingly, just now you mentioned like you want to share with your audience and your clients about the importance of having that residency in Singapore, right? So from your perspective, what made you decide to give up your citizenship in your homeland? I mean, like, what attracted you to Singapore? Maybe you can share with our audience.
I guess I'm very blessed to be here. I would say I'm very blessed to be here. And I really admire how Singapore government manage Singapore so well. You know, everything is good, stable, politically stable, facilities as well, infrastructure. Mm. So I felt like this is where I belong. And of course, the fact that I have a Singaporean son, right? Mm. So it gives me a lot more sense of belonging to continuously, being here. And I don't see myself really going back. So that's why, I decided to apply for Singapore citizenship.
Right. So has your clients ever asked you like, hey, Kay, I'm thinking about applying citizenship in Singapore. Do you think I should take this step? Should I give up my citizenship in my homeland? Like, what are the pros and cons? Like, how do you usually advise? Like, what is the thought process like? And how do one person make this important decision? Because once you do that, there's no going back, right?
Yes, there's no going back.
Yeah. So how does one family make this decision usually?
I think they really have to think through, because if you were to give up your passport, right, correct, the moment, if you still have family members in your home country, right, where you came from, it might be a bit more difficult for you to go back, right, if let's say your family member fell sick, right, or if you have overseas property, then you have to give it up as well, because some country does not allow, a non-citizen to holding onto certain type of property. Yeah, just like how Singapore is, right? Yeah, correct. So I think they have to really think through. There's no turning back, like you say. You can't just say like, oh, can I reverse, the process? Yeah.
Right.
So they really need to see where they want to be in the next, 20, 30 years. Yeah, 20, right. 30 years of their life.
Right.
Yeah.
So apart from, of course, your family is here, what gave you also the courage to start your own business in Singapore? Because 3.5 years back, I believe you were PR. Was your key consideration point, apart from inspiration, that you want to add value and power to foreigners in Singapore, right? What was the consideration point that gives you the courage to start your business?
Well, I guess it's a lot about my family background. Yeah, and the reason why I even come to Singapore is because my family are not so well to do in Malaysia, and I see how my family struggle, and I wanted to make a difference to my family. So that's why I always wanted to be a business owner. At many point of my life, I was trying to see if there is any opportunity. I almost wanted to open a F&B business. Luckily, I didn't. It's not easy in Singapore.
Right.
Yeah, but maybe at one point, I would be in. It's my passion also. Yeah, I kind of like food, right? Yeah. Mm. So that's why I stumbled upon this industry, and I learned a lot, and I felt like I've built a good base, like client base, I built a lot of knowledge, and it's really for me, to be continuously helping expats. So that's why I started this, the immigration people. Yeah.
Right. Beatrice, I think just now before the interview, you're also sharing that you're very excited to ask Kay about her journey as a business owner. Yeah, yeah. What are some key questions you want to...
No, I mean, I was just thinking it was very brave of you to especially go into this industry, which was, you mentioned in the previous episode, that's a very unregulated industry, right? What were some of the struggles that you faced in the beginning when you were trying to build up your client base? Or find your footing in the industry? What were some of the biggest challenges you faced?
Is this a very competitive industry?
Definitely very competitive because it's non-regulated. Yeah. So actually, technically, anyone can just, the next day set up an immigration consultancy firm and then you help to fill out form. But if you talk about, do you really have the immigration knowledge? When it's a non-regulated industry, we face a lot of competition. So when me and my partner, we wanted to set up the immigration people, we want to be different. So I think one of our core value is integrity. I think this one, we are very aligned with you, your company as well. Yeah. So if the client have a very low chance to get it, we'll be very upfront with the client. So from time to time, we turn down lots of clients, but when we turn them down, they will introduce their friend to us because they know that we are more genuine, you see.
How about, go back to your question. Struggles, your struggles for the first 1 year. What were some key struggles that you had?
Well, we are being told by some marketing agency that, your company offer is not attractive enough. you should be more attractive. You should offer something more attractive, like whatever, you know, other people are doing. So to gain more market share, I guess one of the struggles is that we know that our quality of work, it's there, you know, and we are not getting enough client. Other people are snatching it just because of, you know, they sugarcoat everything and make it sounds very nice, right? Yeah, so this is our struggle. So we felt like, oh, this client, you know, got rejected with other company. They should have come to us, right? Because we do audit assessment of some of the work as well, whether the client did it themselves or they did with other consultancy firm. And we sometimes we point out to them that, oh, you know, this is not right. Yeah, so when the client get disappointed, and because they wasted money, they wasted time, they wasted their chance of being a PR.
Yeah. Interesting. I'm sure you've met like many different types of people from all over the world who want to, you know, find their place in Singapore. And I'm sure you've helped a lot of families. What are some of the more like, memorable, I think, families or clients that you've helped? Like, I'm sure you've had some that really, like, you know, like, touch your heart or...
So actually, I have helped really a lot of cases. I think one of the more memorable one, it's pretty unique situation. So it's a single mom, actually. So she has a child, and then she later on get married to a Singaporean. And the Singaporean husband actually sponsored the wife to be a Singapore PR, right? But then because it's not his biological son, so he did not manage to get anything. So he didn't get the guidance, right, from anybody. So he just blindly applying for PR over and over again.
For the son.
For the son, yeah. Ah. So when I came in and I told him that you're not doing the right thing because you can't, right? You have to do a legal adoption process first. Yeah, so I you know, guided him through the process, of course, with a lawyer help, right? Okay, and he managed to get an invitation to get for citizenship for the son instead of PR. So directly get citizenship after the adoption process is done. Yeah. So and he was very grateful. He told me that I managed to save at least, I think, about $20,000 to $30,000, because if his son were to go to university with the foreigner status, that's the amount of money that he has to pay. Yeah, but then now he's a Singaporean. Yeah. So I think this is something that, you know, the client is also very grateful, and, you know, we are also very happy.
Huge win. Right.
And I think very interesting story. I mean, where do you learn? I mean, how do you keep up with like all these policies and rules as a business owner? Like, where do you learn all this? And and like how do you also keep your team updated about how to do the right thing at the right time?
I think a lot of information are not on ICA website. Yeah, correct. All these kind of special cases, you won't find it on ICA website. It's through really, you know, calling them, asking them about this situation. That's where you learn case to case, right? There are too many different scenarios. I even have clients who are single and he has like 3 different children from 3 different women. Right now, I want to apply for citizenship. So what should we do? So these are the cases whereby you will not find any information on the website. So basically, you need to call ICA, you need to understand. And of course, based on many years of experience that we already have, right? So we'll know what to do. Yeah. And I think one of the good culture from the company is that we have regular meeting and regular training. So whenever we stumble upon a unique cases, we always do the sharing and we document it. Yeah, we will put it into...
So everybody can learn.
Yes, correct.
Is it like a weekly huddle kind of thing?
Yes, correct. Okay. Exactly. Right. Yeah. So we will share like what are the new policy change. So everybody will be updated.
You started this business in 20... When was that? 2019. Okay.
Months before COVID hit.
What are your thoughts about the entrepreneurial journey in Singapore? Do you think in Singapore it is a very business-friendly country? Would you do it again?
Definitely.
Right.
Yeah. Singapore is really business friendly. So that's why it attracted a lot of foreigners to come in here and start their business. This is what the government wants as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how is it business friendly? I think the first and foremost is about the tax, right? So in Singapore, business tax, you know, for company, corporate tax, we call it, yeah, 17%. And you only pay based on profit. Yeah, if you're not earning any money, you're not earning any money, then you don't have to pay the 17%. Yeah, right. So that's one. And of course, we also see, like, you know, there are a lot of grants available, especially for local company.
Right.
So that is also one of the motivation why a lot of foreign business owner here wants to convert to a PR so that they can enjoy all these grants, you see.
Right.
So during COVID, right, there are like job support scheme, yeah, that help to pay a partial of the salary for local employee. And then there's this job growth incentive, you know, if during COVID you manage to grow your business, I'm going to incentivize you. So these are a lot of government initiative, you know, that kind of like attracted me to really start a business here. And also, of course, everything is very transparent, right? If, the way you do business. I have ever heard like people do business overseas before even start the business, then someone will be asking for money.
Right.
Yeah, so it will not happen here.
Right. Mm. Awesome. Beatrice, would you want to share your past experience of your previous business? Beatrice used to be an entrepreneur as well.
Oh,
before
nice.
She found her passion in real estate.
Yeah. I mean,
she was how many years F&B?
I was in F&B for about 5-6 years. About wow. 6 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, no. So when you said, like, you know, you also have a passion in F&B, but you said it's really tough in Singapore, I was like, yes. I can I can empathize. But yeah, I mean, today is about K, right? No.
Sure, but like in terms of like your 5 to 6 years of that learning journey from previous business, what were some thought process about like doing business in Singapore, like in terms of maybe like 1 to 2 things that will help our audience who also aspire to be entrepreneurs?
Well, wow, this seems like like a lifetime ago. But I think like what Kay mentioned just now, I think you learn a lot when you're doing. I think before you start a business, there's no guidebook or there's no manual and there's nothing. I mean, you can only learn when you're doing it. So a lot of things like from finding a suitable, because I was in F&B, so finding labor was one huge issue.
Manpower.
For me. Manpower.
Yeah. Right.
Also doing the training, and then also having to sort of navigate like Kay said, during COVID, there were a lot of different like grants and that, you know, the government was giving to help small businesses like myself, learning how to navigate all of that. And then at the same time, the daily management of the operations, you know, on the ground, being on the ground, just being able to, I was very much a one-man show. Mm. So looking back, I think I would have thought of, I guess, delegating a bit better. Yeah, building a team.
Yeah.
Yeah, to manage different aspects of the business. Because I think being a one-man show is a little bit...
It's difficult. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, so when you mentioned like you have a team that supports you as well and everybody is like on the same page, I think that's very important.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Kay, how big is your... Thanks for sharing, Beatrice. How big is your team now?
We have about 15, including myself.
Mm. Yeah. So when you started... 2019, were you a one-man show back then?
No, we had 4 of us.
Right.
Yeah, we started off with 4.
Yeah, and what are some of your learning journey, like, how do you expand, I mean, over the past 3 over years, like, how do you, I mean, Beatrice was talking about hiring process, learning while building the business, then handling ops strategy, as well as navigating the marketplace, right? How do you, well, maybe like 1 to 3 things that you think has help you to be successful to be where you are today?
I think it's very important to find the right talent to fit in certain role. I started off, you know, in my business, I was still a sales consultant back then, doing a lot of sales, but then now my focus is training the sales team instead. So that's how you can scale, because if you get yourself, you know, stuck in the role doing sales, it's very hard for you to have time to think about your business. Yeah, so I think that's one, right? And then I think a successful business owner will hire someone who's smarter than him. Yeah, or her, right? So you find the right people, you know, smarter than you, doing the work better than you. Yeah, I think that's very important for the business to scale as well. Mm. Yeah.
Right. So number one is talent. I mean, based on what I've heard. How about like the second point that you think is very important in terms of the success ingredient?
I think being a business owner, it's very important to be persistent. Yeah, okay. And resilient as well.
Right. Mm,
because even my business is only 3.5 years old, but we have come across, you know, many different problems, right? So we face some difficulties as well. Yeah, at one point, business was quite stagnant, so we have to think of what is the next thing. Yeah, so I think the business owner itself must be very persistent and resilient.
Right. How about like in terms of this space that you have been in, right? What is maybe because this business seems to me like you're handling a very niche segment.
Yes.
Yeah. So just now when you're talking about like 3.5 years, you have problems, you want to expand your USP, your value add to consumers. Like how big can this immigration business grow to in terms of handling different parts of expatriates process to Singapore? Like maybe share with our audience what is the whole ecosystem? How does the whole ecosystem look like?
Yeah, I think if you talk about the industry, right, actually it can grow to quite big depending on what you're going to do, right? Example, what are the type of services? If you take a look at Fregoman, is one of the biggest immigration firms. It's an MNC company. So besides doing the passes, they also help with the, you know, logistic-wise, right? So if you have someone that you want to send to Singapore, so they are engaging company. So companies is engaging this kind of immigration firm and helping them to solve like, you know, one-stop solution. They provide one-stop solution. So they will first help to maybe book a ticket, you know, and then help them with the logistic of all this kind of furniture, moving them,
right.
Finding school, you know, finding a rental place, temporary lodging when they're looking for a good home to be in Singapore. So they provide everything. So
from
I think
start to finish.
Yes, correct. So this is where we also want to be in one day. Yeah, but right now we're going pretty in depth in the passes. So we are thinking of expanding it horizontally as well, doing more things. Or maybe, you know, migration to overseas as well.
Wow.
So like example, you know, to Canada, Australia.
Right. Beatrice, what is your experience like working with your foreign clients? Like do they also ask you about like passes and all that kind of stuff?
What Kay mentioned just now, so they come to Singapore. So actually, do you have clients who that you come across that actually DIY, like most of them, like, you know, try applying for the passes themselves or they try.
Especially PR. Yeah. PR. Work pass normally will be handled by the company that's going to hire them. But PR, a lot of them will try to do it themselves.
I think recently we're seeing on the ground, maybe more clients looking for houses who like have already been in Singapore for some time. Yeah, so they're not new to Singapore, so they've been working here or they already have other family here and they're looking for a home.
I don't know, like currently after the ABSA has increased from 30% to 60%, right? Do you have clients that defer their decision to purchase? I mean, do you have foreign clients that defer?
I think it depends on which segment of the market they're looking at. Yeah, I think when it comes to the higher quantum we can see from the charts here, surprisingly, 40% we're seeing the most demand in the OCR resale market. So that's 40% there. And they're actually not buying a lot of new launches, surprisingly. More resale. I think also because probably they don't have to wait so long.
Yep.
So they're seeing opportunities in the resale market.
So it was quite shocking, right, when our research team came up with this chart. So just to share with Kay, once the ABSD was announced, we actually got our research team to went back and track, like for the past 2 years, what are foreign investors and buyers buying? And surprisingly, about 40% quite consistently, they are actually purchasing resale condos in the mass market region. Like, have you heard about such statistics before, like based on your dealings with expatriates, like usually do they ask you about mass market condos or they have a preference in the area that they're buying?
I guess it's because a lot of them will like to find a place to rent first, right? And somehow they like the place, and then it could be this could be the reason. But client normally they don't really talk to us about
their real estate.
Yeah, correct.
Right. How about you personally? Like, do you think our real estate pricing is very high now? Like, what are your thought process? I mean, since you came to Singapore many years back, what has been your observation of the real estate market?
Wow, I think the rental is crazy nowadays. So a lot of them wants to buy a property, but given their status is, a foreigner. So with the 60%, I think they will have to think really hard. Yeah, before, they want to buy their own place. And I think it encourages a lot of them to apply for PR as well. Correct.
Right. So is an ultra high net worth individual. Yeah. Of course, we saw a lot of news that the 60% doesn't really affect the ultra high net worth individuals. But if we are talking about families that probably has a budget range of maybe below 5 million, then definitely 60% will be affected, right?
Yes.
So correct. With this shift, do you forecast that a lot of people will try to apply for PR? And also, has PR applications soared over the past 3 years? Is it like a very aggressive kind of application mode towards PR? And based on the white paper that we saw in 2013 until today, it seems that Singapore government is restricting the amount of PRs that they're giving out, because the forecast until 2030, which is in 7 years' time, it seems that the amount of PRs that our government wants is still at about 600,000.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
So, what is your sensing on PR application? Is it like on a very high demand now?
It has been quite consistent, actually. If you take a look at the data, every year the government does receive about 80,000 to 100,000 of application.
Right.
Yeah. That remains pretty much similar because of the number of foreigners that we have here as well.
Right.
Yeah, because it has been quite consistent all along. So I guess they will kind of slightly increase the number of PR and number of citizenship because they want to grow the population.
Mm.
Yeah, correct. We cannot just solely rely on foreigners. Of course, we also have to grow the local resident as well.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that it might be, it is indeed a good time to apply for PR. Yeah, I've seen people who have been living here for the past 10 years, 19 years, finally get their PR after try for multiple times. Yeah. So government definitely giving all these people now, since that they already committed so much of their time here.
So 2023 compared to 2021, difficulty level of getting PRs, has it increased or decreased?
I think it was quite consistent all along. It was difficult.
Okay, so it has always been difficult.
It has always been difficult.
Okay.
Yeah.
Out of 80,000 to 100,000 applications, that is per year, is it?
Per year, okay. Yes.
How many percent gets approved?
Approval, it's about 30,000 to 33,000
per year.
But it's counted as per head. Yeah. So the application is for family. It will be one application. Yeah. But the approval, they counted it as per head.
Oh.
So the approval rate is actually lower than 30%.
I see. Okay. Right. So if a family has five people, they count it into that 30,000 over.
Yeah. But of course, we have single applicants as well, right? Applying for PR alone. Yeah.
Okay. Sensitive question. Are certain nationalities favored?
Overall, ICA will look at many factors when it comes to a PR application, like maybe your qualification, your age, is your family here with you, how long you've been here, right? Do you have any property here, right? Or insurance, investment. So it showcases that you have a commitment to sing root here in Singapore, right? Yeah. So all these are very important. But nationality, it does influence a little bit, because there is a certain way of government trying to maintain the ethnic ratio in Singapore. Yeah, if you look closely, despite Chinese, having low birth rate, but Chinese population, the percentage we're talking about, has remained pretty consistent because government will have to maintain certain ratio here.
Right. So when you see an application, when you meet a client, how do you know that instantly this application has no chance?
True. The factors, we're going to evaluate the client based on the 12 factors.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe share with us your 10 to 12 factors.
Like I mentioned, qualification is one.
Okay. What qualification has very low chance?
If you do not have any qualification, obviously they prefer people who at least have a tertiary qualification. And if you come from a top tier institution, right, okay, that helps, like Ivy League, you know. Yeah, so you score a higher point in terms of your qualification.
Okay,
yeah.
So firstly, if you have a degree and tertiary, it helps. How about the second point?
Your age. Yeah, age is quite important, especially for PR.
What's the prime age?
Prime working age in Singapore is actually between 25 to 54 years old. So the moment you cross 55 years old and above, I do see that, you know, you will struggle for a bit. But if, let's say, your economic contribution are high, you know, you have certain skill set that you cannot find among the local, you still have a good chance in getting approval. So ICA will evaluate the application on a very holistic basis.
Right. So age between 25 to 54.
Yes, correct.
Okay. So that means they don't want people to come here to retire.
Yes, there's no such thing. Yeah, because I've ever received a lot of inquiry like this before. Yeah,
like, I want to retire in Singapore.
I want to retire
in
Singapore.
Can I get a PR? Okay. So most of the time, if there's no other good factors, it might be rejected.
Because you need to provide payslip.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. So if you do not have payslip, then it's very hard. Seriously. Okay. Yeah.
How about the third point? Like, so you talk about education, you talk about age.
I think family ties is quite important. Okay. So, you know, there are certain, maybe S pass holder, they are not meeting the 6,000 of salary in order to bring their family in. So their family are most of the time living in their home country. So ICA will see that there is a huge possibility that you might go back home to your loved one. If I were to give you a PR, so you might not, you know.
You might waste a slot.
Yeah, you might waste a slot. Right. Yes, correct.
So that is family ties.
Family ties. And of course, if you're married to a citizen, right, so it will be much easier for you to get.
Right, okay. How about the fourth one? And then, out of curiosity, because we in PRB, you have this thing called the moat analysis. We have 10 different factors to see whether a property has a high scoring or low scoring in Singapore. We fresh feed our API of all the condominiums in Singapore. Like based on your 10 to 12 factors, do you have like an auto AI scoring system?
Oh, we
like,
do have it on our website, yes.
Okay,
So if people wants to know their chances, they should use our calculator. Wow. Yeah, but for a more accurate, you know, is to speak to us because we do give like a range of salary.
Okay.
But the specific, you know, all the specific things.
Right. Which part of the website is it? Is it like?
Right. So you can go to the homepage.
Okay.
Yeah. This one, calculate your chances.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so they need to tell us. Yeah, so you see, we ask for a lot of information.
Oh.
Yeah.
I see. Interesting.
Industry also quite important.
Okay.
If you want to know the next one, which is very important, is industry.
So what are some industries that Singapore favor?
Of course, if it's aligned with Singapore direction of trying to be a smart nation.
Okay.
Yeah, like example, maybe technology, you know, you're from you're in cybersecurity, you're in fintech space, or maybe tech agriculture, because we're trying to self-sustain, right, in terms of our food supply. Yeah, so if you're in the tech agriculture space, renewable energy, so these are the favorable industry.
Right. How about industries that are usually rejected? like maybe just some that you have seen before.
Yeah, I think service industry, it's the chances is quite low. Service industry, okay. F&B as well, because basically there are already a lot of Singaporean and local in this industry. So we do not really need this kind of skill set in the country. Yeah, correct.
Right. Number six, have you participated in any community work? Okay. Yeah, maybe share with us a little bit about this.
Yeah, so remember we talk about volunteering work. Yeah. So like I say, I just got my citizenship approval, right? I'm being put on a different task to do before I can get my Singapore citizenship. And one of it is community sharing session. And they are actually recruiting new citizen to be a volunteer. Yeah. So, and I learned that one of our shared value in Singapore is really, you know, helping each other in the community. Yeah. Mm. So I think it's really quite important. So it does help with the PR and citizenship application.
Right. Mm. Okay. Interesting. So I saw like 6-7 points here. Like maybe share with us another 1 to 2 things that is really an important insight for a successful PR application.
I think economic contribution obviously is also quite important. Mm. Mm. But it all depending on your age. Let's say you're a fresh grad, right? Of course, the government will not have high expectation that you have to earn $10,000-$20,000. But as you move, you know, you should be moving up the organization stairs, right? And then earn a higher salary. So they don't quite like people who get stagnant in their job for too long.
Okay. Yeah, how do they determine that?
Like? Oh, you're being asked for your full employment history, in your form. So after you graduated, what is your first job? And then they will ask you to write the salary. Mm. Right. Yeah. So that's how they know. Yeah. And they know how you get your first bucket of money as well for those business owner.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like everything is.
Yes.
Okay.
They'll ask for your parents' information as well. So it's quite, you know, extensive. Yeah. Okay.
How long is the entire process long, like to have a successful PR application to be approved, as well as the citizenship as well? Like, does it take years on?
Yes.
maybe share with us like PR and citizenship.
So if you talk about PR, if you're holding on to EP, we normally recommend client to apply for PR only after 1 year being living here, right? For 1 year, because then you will have like an income tax record. Right, yeah. So it's like a probation period as well. So I say, would like to see how are you doing during this 1 year? Mm. Yeah, how are you doing? You know, did you really stay here? Yeah. Are you clocking in at least half of the time here? Are you a tax resident? You know, living here for 183 days, you know. So 1 year later, you apply, right? And then ICA would take somewhere between 6 to 9 months to evaluate your application. Yeah, sometimes it can go up to 1 year. Or 2 years as well.
Mm.
Yeah. My longest approval that I have observed is 2.5 years.
To get approved.
Yeah, correct. But this is something that is not,
out of the norm.
Yeah, it's out of the norm. Yeah, most of the time.
What are the factors that affect the length of approval? Like,
okay, sometimes it's because there isn't any quotas available. Yeah, and maybe you put up a good case. Yeah, but there's no quota. So I will maybe just wait for the next round to see if there is any quota that I can slot you in. Mm. So no news is actually a good news. Yeah, so because if they really do not like your profile, they will normally reject you. Maybe 4 months later, you get a rejection.
So it wouldn't take so long.
Yeah, it wouldn't take so long. Yeah, so 2 years being a PR, then you can file for your Singapore citizenship.
Mm. Mm. Citizenship. Application process?
1 to 2 years.
Wow, okay. Longest?
Mine waited for 16 months.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Longest that you have seen?
Yeah, it's also about two and a half years.
Okay, before you get an answer.
Before you get an answer. Whether so you would just go pending, yeah.
Wow, okay. And how do you keep checking the status? Like,
You can check online. Now everything is online. Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, like being in this business, like where do you see Singapore going in terms of our demographics, right? Mm. Like Beatrice, you have your notes, right? In terms of white paper, yeah, maybe you can share with Kay a little bit.
Mm.
Like 2030, right? Definitely.
Yeah,
6.9 million, 50% Singaporeans, 50% foreigners. Mm. Out of the 6.9 million, 3.6 to 3.8 Singaporeans, 600,000 PRs, 2.3 to 2.5 non-residents.
Mm.
So do you have information about demographics? Do you all study about like maybe what's going to happen in 2035 or 2040? And personally, how do you see the trending in terms of demographics?
Well, honestly, I felt like this 6.9 million in a few years' time is pretty difficult.
Mm.
Yeah. But, I think when Singapore government set a target, right, they will try to achieve it. They'll try to close the gap. Yeah. So I think it really needs a lot of foreigners to come in. Right, as you can see, you know, we will need a lot more foreigners to come in to really complement local workforce. Mm. Yeah, so that's why they want highly skilled people to come in here to share knowledge with the local as well. Yeah, so we can leverage, you know, on them coming in. Some of them want to set up business so it can create job opportunities for local.
Right.
Yeah.
So why do you think the gap is pretty hard to be reached? Like, what is the current population figures now?
5.64.
Right. And yearly, how many foreigners are coming in? Like on a rough basis?
Actually, we do see a spike. Yeah, like I mentioned, after COVID. Right, we do see a spike, but other than that, it has remained quite consistent for the number of a foreigner. It has always been about 1.6, 1.7. Yeah, correct. So now to grow to 2.3, I think they really need to
beef up the numbers.
Yeah, correct.
Right. Okay. And do you think this growth is a must in Singapore? I mean, like based on what you have seen, do you think we must go to this number?
I think there's a reason why government set the number, because of our low fertility rate and our aging population. So, and of like I mentioned, Singaporeans are not giving birth enough, right? Yeah, so that's why they need to rely on, you know, giving PR status. And Singapore is made up of, you know, foreigners as well. Yeah, it's an immigrants country, right? So we really need them to come in here. With new people, then there will be new PR. Then with new PR, then there will be new citizen. Right. Yeah.
Right. So I mean, based on the trending, right, of demographics, with this in mind, real estate is always one of the big things that everybody would talk about first.
Yeah.
Rental, eventually PR, chances of buying increases, right? How about your own thoughts? Like, usually, how would you think about the first property that a PR family will usually buy first? Like, if a PR family, husband and wife, both got PR 3 years, they actually can be eligible to buy a resale HDB. And of course, they can go for a condo as well if their finances are okay. Usually, what are the thought process like? Do you think somebody should go for a HDB first or directly go to a condo? Like, what are your own preference for a dual PR family?
I think it depends on the budget, right? Yeah. And I think some of these foreigners, right, they have been living in their rented place for some time. And a lot of them, you know, they don't want to get used to new environment. Maybe their kids are studying nearby as well. So that's why they ended up, you know, buying the property that they're currently renting. I think that's quite normal. Yeah. Unless, you know, they have a car and then they want to move somewhere else, then they will look for other places. Yeah. Right. But in terms of HDB or condo, I think because most of my clients, they are white collars and a lot of them are earned 10,000 and above. So with their capability, you know, financial standing, they will go for a condo.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, I mean, based on your own network of clients, usually they are looking at private properties.
Yes, they're looking at private properties.
How about like your own sensing, like understanding the landscape in Singapore, which type of property do you personally prefer? Like, do you think is a good asset to hold for long term appreciation? Like, based on your understanding so far.
Oh, I need to talk to you about that. Right. I think HDB is a good deal. I felt like it's not overpriced. Yeah, I felt like HDB in Singapore, it's in terms of the environment and how the government maintained, you know, the outlook of it. Yeah, it looks new, you know, and then very clean. Yeah, and spacious as well.
Right.
Yeah, so if you ask me, my preference is HDB. Yeah,
right. Beatrice, like, what are your thoughts? Like, usually, how would you also advise your clients that maybe a double PR family? Then they can afford actually a condominium as well as a resale HDB. How do you actually advise them?
I think Kay pointed out a very good point. So, of course, budget comes into play. I think if you have the resources and the capability, then we were looking at the numbers just now, where our population is going to in by 2030. If you look at the I would say the category of property, we always like to categorize the different types of private property that we have in Singapore in different quadrants. So which one will give you maybe
higher yield in terms of rental yield, but at lower quantum, or something that is like higher quantum, like the landed segment. But of course, if you are a PR, if you're a PR couple, then you need approval to go into the landed segment.
Right.
That one is also dependent on whether or not you get LDAU approval. But I think most of the clients that we see on the ground have a preference for private condos. Because that one, in terms of supply, compared to, let's say, the landed segment, I think we have like about quite a fixed supply of
3,000.
Yeah, in terms of the landed. But if you look at condo numbers, that's like about 350,000 right now in terms of the stock. And even with all the new launches that's coming up this year, I think the supply is quite fixed in that sense. So that this segment of property, I think, still appeals to a lot of foreigners because it's easily accessible in terms of the quantum as well. And they have more choices lah, in that sense. In terms of the type, do they want to go for a resale condo? Do they want to go for a new launch condo? And other factors come into play, like location also. Do you see like a preference in terms of like location for your clients when they're looking for properties? Like,
I think
which part of Singapore do they like?
Yeah, I think most of my clients, a lot of them choose not to have a car here. So they would rather stay close to the schools, right? So I think a lot of my clients, they are sending their kids into international school, like example, Stanford American.
Right.
So if you talk about Stanford American, so Woodleigh and Potong Pasir area, it's their top choices. It's very, very near.
Right.
Yeah.
So you mentioned like actually they prefer not to have vehicles.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Yeah. I think a lot of my clients, they do not have any vehicles here because it's so convenient. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So that makes sense. Like they want to choose somewhere near to an MRT station.
Yes.
Things like that. Okay. Mm. Awesome. And so far, maybe just a final couple of questions, right? Usually when you consult a client, you talk about their past. What other aspects are you usually interested about to advise them further also, like for their well-being in Singapore, like in terms of schools and all that? Usually, what kind of advice do you share with your clients to value add them?
I think I'll share a bit about their education. Yeah, the child education, I mean.
Right.
Yeah, correct. So because most of my clients, the reason why they want to apply for PR and citizenship, it's not because of them. It's because of their child. Yeah, it's because of their child. So, you know, they want their child to have a better options, yeah, to get a better education here in Singapore. So that's why a lot of them will come and ask us for like advice on the school, you know, what school to go to. Yeah, so I think that's also quite common. Yeah, property, I think, will come later. Yeah, after they get their PR. So some of them will ask us. Yeah, and of course, also, you know, in terms of what kind of insurance, right, they should have in Singapore, investment. So these are the things that we will advise a client.
Right. So after understanding all this, what usually entails, like after they get their pass, like do they come back to you for additional services later on? Like at this point of your journey as a business owner, what do you intend to expand next in terms of your service? Like maybe you can just give us a quick preview about your next plan.
We're definitely quite interested to set up a concierge services.
Right.
Yeah. Just help to, you know, just help to provide one-stop solution for the clients. We're trying to be the expert in Singapore. Yeah, tackling a different area, you know, whatever they need when they come here.
Mm.
Yeah, like example, education, you know, arranging for school visit, right? So you talk about concierge services. Yeah, arranging for school visit, applying for school, and then once they come in here, you know, all the nitty-gritty thing, like, you know, setting up SingPass. So a very professional concierge services. So this is what TIP hope to do in the next 3 to 5 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. That sounds great. Concierge service. Beatrice, do you have any final questions for Kay?
No, I think it's been a very interesting session to build up from the first one that we had 2 years ago. Yeah, I think because the landscape has also changed. I think trends, immigration trends are also changing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe share with our audience, where is your office now? And then of course, like how do they reach you as well? As I understand that your YouTube channel has been growing. Yeah. So maybe you can share with our audience a little bit about where to connect with you.
Yeah, so our office is located at the CBD area. We're at the International Plaza Tanjung Pagar. And of course, they can always go to our website, which is quite easy to remember. It's www.tip, right? Like a tip, you know, tip.com.sg.
Right.
And that's where they can leave their concerns, you know, if they have any question for us. We do receive quite a lot of people asking us about renewal of PR, right? So after they get PR, a lot of them sometimes, you know, they have problem renewing their re-entry permit. Yeah, so that's where we can help them as well. Yeah.
And your YouTube channel is?
Yes, my YouTube channel. You just search for The Immigration People, you'll find us.
Right, awesome. Yeah. And last question is that consultation usually takes place weekdays or weekends, or timings are quite flexible?
Timings are quite flexible. Weekend, we do consultation as well, but just have to book the consultation in advance. Yeah, okay. We do both online or face-to-face session.
Right. And do your clients get to work directly with you or with your senior team? Like how does it work?
I hardly do sales anymore. Right. So they will work closely with my consultant team. Yeah. But if they would like me to oversee their case, so we have two different packages on our website.
Right.
So the premium package whereby clients will want our, the director's expertise. So that's where we'll come in and oversee the case. Overseeing means that their cover letter, we will take a look, you know, give some advice before we send out to the client. Yeah, we're constantly in the loop of all the email correspondences.
Great. Yeah. Awesome. Great. Thanks for being here on the
Thank
NOTG.
You.
Appreciate your time. And of course, if you want to find out more about Kay as well as The Immigration People, just head on to their YouTube channel. They have a couple of very interesting content. I think I saw a lot of like short clips
yes.
on different topics. They talk about ABSD as well. Also how to increase your chances of PR application and stuff like that. So thanks Kay for sharing your journey as a business owner, as well as talking about the current landscape in terms of expatriates, foreigners coming to Singapore. We appreciate your time. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Alvin.
All right. Awesome. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.